The following content is provided by MIT OpenCourseWare under a Creative Commons license. Additional information about our license and MIT OpenCourseWare in general is available at ocw.mit.edu.
Electronics, specifically heat, will probably take a lot of time. And if you couldn't quite get everything done, turn it in. And you may find that in a research paper. This is something I actually once asked one graduate student of mine did, and he didn't do it. So it could be, if you want to work more on it, you can extend it and write a term paper. Check literature what people have done. Or you want to do it even more than that, you can go to write a paper out of your term paper. If the idea can be applied to, say, for example, a specific material, if this is a topic people haven't looked intensively, you can see whether you can write a paper. I always encourage if you get something out of course, not just knowledge, but really learning how to do research. I wrote one paper. I remember when I took a course in quantum electronics, and the professor asked, write a term paper. I said, well, I don't know. It seems that you're doing better than I took a course in this nonlinear optics. That's from beginning to end, I got lost because the professor talking about the only thing I remember now is the Feynman diagram, double-sided Feynman diagram. That's I don't know how to draw it myself, but I remember terminology. But out of it, I wrote a term paper, and the professor liked it. He gave me an A+ out of it. I feel embarrassed because I didn't learn much. In the last lecture, there are two places I said I want to check and correct. One is whether it's a factor of 3 or factor of 9. It was a factor of 9. The book is right. And the other place is whether it's a half kBT or 1 kBT. It's 1 kBT. And at the end of the specific heat, of the a crystal that has n atoms per unit volume. So the specific heat of a crystal, so this is per unit volume, how many atoms, and each atom has three vibrational direction. You can say that's each direction has 1/2 kx squared, that's a potential energy, plus 1/2 mv squared, that's a kinetic energy. And in the equipartition theorem, each of this mode contribute a kBT. So the specific heat then per unit volume is 3 mV times kB. That's the at the high temperature limit. So those are the two corrections I make for the last lecture. Let's recall what we were talking in the last lecture. The objective of this chapter is looking at the wave propagation and the energy carried by waves. And the one important component of that is trying to find the transmissivity, transmission, how much energy is going really from one place to the other place. And the example we looked at first is I have electron wave coming in to a potential step, and this potential step height is U, and I have electron wave comes in, and from the Schrodinger equation, I know the solution for this electron wave that comes in is whatever coefficients that's more a representation of how many electrons comes in, and the minus k1x, and this is the x direction, this is the origin of the coordinate, and then I have a reflection of the wave go in this direction, I could write, I don't know the coefficients, I want to find the relation of this coefficient relate to what comes in, how much is reflected. But because it's propagating in the opposite direction, so rather than minus k1x, it becomes a plus k1x. And this is just a solution of the Schrodinger equation. Okay, and then in the transmitted wave, you have wave propagating towards the positive x direction is, say, exponential minus I omega t minus k2x, where from the Schrodinger equation, we know k1 is 2m e divided by h bar square, and k2 equals 2m e minus u divided by h bar square. So this are the results we obtained in chapter 2, and the whole problem, you did the homework before I talk about it. I just want to make now a parallel treatment. So you can see from this solution, I matched the wave function on both sides and matched the gradient on both sides. At the end, what I obtained is the ratio for the coefficients. This is a 2k1 divided by k1 plus k2, and b divided by a is k1 minus k2 and k1 plus k2. So those are the relationship after I apply the boundary condition, that the wave function on the two sides are continuous and the first derivative is continuous. But also in the last lecture, we said the wave function itself doesn't mean anything. It's the wave function times wave function complex conjugate means particle density. And also for when I consider what comes in, I want to calculate what's the flux of the particle comes in. So the flux, we already gave the general way to calculate that flux is the real part for I h bar divided by m, and psi complex conjugate square, gradient. So you take a gradient first, and then you put it in your complex conjugate. Or you can actually also do first complex conjugate and the gradient, and get the same results. That's I showed the steps, going through the steps to show that if you apply this general expression to what comes in, to the wave function comes in, so we know the incident flux, that's the I is incident, then is h bar m, and what I have is a square, that's the absolute value, and I have real part of k1 complex conjugate. And of course, for this problem, k1, the energy is positive of the electron comes in, so k1 is positive, it's a real number. So I can put that because the real part of a real number is just that number itself. So this one is h bar m a square k1. So that's easy. And then I can similarly write the reflected is the same h bar b square k1, because you can do the math yourself. If I do everything carefully, I will get a negative sign represent the direction, because the flux is having direction. That will means going backwards. Okay? And then the transmitted, this is reflected. And then this is transmitted. I have to be more careful. You can see I have two scenarios. One is when the energy of the incoming, this E is the energy of the incoming electron. If the energy is larger than this barrier height, this one is a real number, right? But if energy is smaller than this barrier height, this K2 is an imaginary number. because E is smaller than U, square root of negative gives the imaginary number. So I have to be more careful here. So what I'm going to just do is I write this as C square, but I say is a real part of K2 complex conjugate. Okay. So now I can define my transmissivity and reflectivity. So the reflectivity is the flux of reflected. Let me put a negative sign because I don't. It's a fraction how much. When I define the transmissivity, I'm defining the fraction how much is reflected. And that means it's going backwards, not going forward. Yes? Yeah, that's why I want to put a negative converting into positive number if I carry that. And so Ji, so that's the ratio, or it's the magnitude of what comes in versus what's reflected. That's reflectivity. Reflectivity. And this one, you can see it's on the same side that HM or cancel. So what you get is B square A square equals K1, K2, K1 plus K2. And this also gives me, if I substitute the K1, K2 in, I will get E minus U, E plus E plus U. If I substitute the K1, K2 into, and I assume the mass on both sides are the same. Okay? If mass is different, you carry your mass. Right? So this is reflectivity. And I can also do transmissivity. That's how much, what's the fraction of the incoming flux of particles is transmitted. So this is JT, JI. Then you will give me, again, C square, A square. But I have to do the real part of K2 complex conjugate and K1. That's the, because here I have a real part. Right? So now based on this, let's see what does this result mean. This is a very good example to see what's the difference between a wave description and a particle description. Particle description in classical particle sense. Okay, if I have a hurdle here, I have a wall. Thinking about the electron as the ball comes in, and you can say if energy of the electron is higher than U potential energy. So I translate it into a classical sense. My kinetic energy is higher. So if the particle is taller than the wall, than the potential barrier, and classically just go through. Okay? But what this tells me, quantum mechanically tell me, that there are certain part of it doesn't go through. You will feel the wall underneath it. Bullet going over the wall will feel there is a wall underneath it. There's some of the chance that there's reflection. Part of it go back. So that's a quantum mechanical. The wave feels not just a point, it feels the whole region there. Okay? And so in this case, R is not zero. That's what's strange from classical sense. And you can also reverse it. Okay? So if you have a step like this, you have electron comes in. Okay? Right? You can go to do the same derivation. You get a similar format. And in that case, you will say even a step, going a step, just classically, will just go through, right? But quantum mechanically, there's still reflection back. It's not zero, that R. Okay? So at the interface, wave experience reflection. Right? And that's one thing that's interesting. And the other opposite limit, when E energy is smaller than this potential barrier, is also interesting. So when E is smaller, from classical mechanics, we know we throw a ball, it will bounce back to the wall, right? So totally come back. And now E is smaller. What is R? What's the reflectivity? Look at that. When E is smaller than U, what's this reflectivity? Absolute value. Complex Lambert operation.
One.
Okay. So it's not contradictory to our perception, right? So when this happens, R is 1, and then T, now this one is imaginary, purely imaginary Lambert, the real part is 0. T is 0. Nothing strange, right? Everything seems to be normal. The problem is K2 is not 0, right? K2 is an imaginary number. Look at this. In this case, K2 E minus U, so K2 is some kind of imaginary number, 2M, because I switch it so that inside the square root is positive. Right? In this case, K2 is not 0. It's an imaginary number. What does that imaginary number mean? If I go back and look at the wave function, I look at the wave function here. Okay. Look at there. K2 is imaginary. I have I times the imaginary number. So what I get in my wave function? My wave function of transmitted wave function is C, which C is not 0. Because C is just K1 divided by K2. Didn't say 0 there, right? So C times exponential minus I omega t, and that minus minus sign cancel one, becomes positive. And then I times I becomes minus 1. So I have minus 2m u minus e h bar squared times x. That's interesting. The transmissivity is 0, but the wave function in that region, 2, is not 0. Right? There is a wave there. Quantum mechanical wave there. And this wave decays exponentially. Right? This decays exponentially, and you can plug in number. If this difference is about 1 electron volt, this is very small. It's of the order of angstrom. But of order angstrom, but this de facto is it's not perfectly zero. Exponential decay to zero quickly. And this wave here, it doesn't carry a left flux, right? The flux going to the region 2 is zero. But the wave function is not zero. Because here is zero. JT is zero. And this is the evanescent wave, called evanescent wave. Okay? And this is a, I think I mentioned this before, lot of times those basic physics, before people didn't explore it, couldn't explore it, because it's just too small, and nowadays people routinely explore it. And those kind of evanescent wave is the basis for at least the two Nobel Prize. The most recent one was in, I think, in 86 for the scanning tunneling microscope, as we'll see later on. Okay. So now that's the electron wave, quantum mechanical wave. And as I said, we're going to look in parallel fashion other type of waves, the electromagnetic wave, the acoustic wave. So let's now look at the electromagnetic wave, EM waves. And the one point is to show that although the waves are different physics, okay, different physical origin, but they actually, in terms of mathematical description, you will see they are very similar. And in terms of phenomena, there is also a lot of parallelism. You will see the case where you got the evanescent electromagnetic wave, you got the evanescent acoustic wave. So in none of this modern-day instrumentation, you actually have the analogy. First, a scanning tunneling microscope was invented, then people invented the photon tunneling microscope and the acoustic wave tunneling microscope. So there are all those analogies there because the basic wave mechanics, wave behavior are very similar. So to talk about electromagnetic wave, we have to go to the Maxwell equation. If you think about the Schrodinger equation, the unknown there is the wave function, right? Wave function is one equation described by Schrodinger equation. And the wave function is a scalar. It's not a vector. And then when we talk about electromagnetic fields, those are vector fields. Electric field, magnetic field. So we have electromagnetic wave, electric field, magnetic field. Okay, I want you, pardon me, not going to the detail of those fields defining from the first step, but let's just starting with here. Okay, when an electromagnetic wave comes to interact with the material, so if, for example, you have atoms here, an atom has a positive electron, core, and a negative electron outside, and you have an electric field going this way, the positive electron will experience a force in that direction, negative electron in the other direction. So at the end, you distort the atom, right? They distort the configuration of the electron and the core. And that distortion so create effectively a dipole where you have a pair of charge opposite sign, and the moment of this dipole is just the charge times the distance. Okay, that's a dipole moment. Okay, and you see that you can feel that if in the linear regime, this distance depends on the magnitude of your electric field. The larger the field, the stronger, and it will pull further apart the negative and positive, right? So at the end, because when we deal with a material has a lot of electron, a lot of atoms, and we say the response is per unit volume, how much polarization, how much dipole moment per unit volume. That's a polarization. And this polarization in the linear regime is proportionally related to the electric field, and that's the electrical susceptibility. Okay, so that's just now you have a material there, they will respond to the electric field by creating the dipole moments. We define another quantity, that's the total. In this location, there is this dipole moment, but also there is an original electric field. And here, epsilon zero is a vacuum electrical electric permittivity. Okay, so the locally we see there's the electric field existing, and there's this dipole. We convert all into effectively the polarization. So here is P and epsilon 0 1 plus x times E, and this D here is defined as such is the displacement, the electrical displacement. So basically it's a response of the medium to the electrical incident electric field. So electrical displacement and similarly the magnetic field locally, when you have magnetic field comes in, you will affect the electron orbiting, and that will create the additional magnetic effect. So the response to the magnetic field is mu times H, and this mu is the magnetic permeability. Okay, so those are the quantities that you can see everything is a vector, and the corresponding set of equations describe these vectors is the Maxwell equation. So let me write down the Maxwell equation. What is Maxwell equation gives is first to relate the electric field to a changing magnetic field. B is the B is called the magnetic induction. And so what they say is the local electric field is related to, if you have a changing magnetic field, you will cause an electric field change. Okay? So what this is probably high school physics, right? A changing magnetic field, you put a permanent magnet through a conductor, you move it, it will create a current. Right? So that's this is a Faraday law. Am I right? Faraday?
The second one?
No.
This
yeah.
Yeah, it is Faraday's law, but should really particular if it's induced EMF or current?
Induced amount of current, but the electric field can be related to the current. So it depends on whether if you measure a current or you measure a voltage, right? You have a coil. You put a magnetic field in through the coil. You can measure current or you can measure voltage. And then the second equation is relating the magnetic field to the electrical displacement and the current. So we know this is if there's no change in this term, there's no this term. When you pass a current through a conductor, right? You pass a current through a conductor, there is a magnetic field surrounding the conductor. So if it's not for this equation, this additional term, I think this, I forgot which one is which. One is the amp's law, the other is the this is Amp's law, right? So the Amp's law say if you don't have this extra term, the Amp's law say current going through a conductor generate a magnetic field, right? And in fact, this is what Maxwell contributed. Maxwell contributed one term to the set of Maxwell equation, what do we call now Maxwell equation. And what it relates is, because I was said that this electrical displacement is more the local, even the atom is neutral. Under the effect of electric field, you will distort the electron and core. So the rate of change of that distortion is effectively current, because the electron or positive or negative electron are moving as a function of time. That's a current. So that gives you this, you can think of this as a displacement current. Okay? And then there's two additional equations. One is the Coulomb law that says the local, the divergence of displacement gives you the charge per unit volume. This is the net charge per unit volume. And then, so if you have, we know surrounding each point charge, there is an electric field, right? So this is a Coulomb's law, and then the last one of the Maxwell equation, just to say the divergence of the magnetic induction is zero, and this is because we know the magnet do not have just a unipolar. You always have a north, south, south together. So there's no equivalent of a magnetic charge. Right? So this is zero. So these are the sets of equations, the Maxwell equations. And Maxwell equation, you can see how many variables you have. Four equations, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The current field. Or the charge is what's given, the lead charge. So this one we can further relate. The current is related to electric field. J, the current, is related to electric field. This is the Ohm's law through the electric conductivity, right? So sigma electrical conductivity. And now you can see we have relation between D and E. We have relation between B and H. So we can eliminate and solve these equations. Okay? And the solution, let me skip a lot of this mass. Just say this is the set of vector equation. It's, again, at the end, we know Maxwell described the wave, electromagnetic wave. So if you do your math, I don't expect that you go through all the math, just want to show you the similarities, okay? And if we go through some of the math operation, I can eliminate the H, I can eliminate D and the B using those relationship I have, just get the equation for the electric field. So let me just write down one equation example. If I eliminate all the variables and maintain only the electric field, I would get the equation. This is a vector, so it has three components. That means it's a three equation, mu, epsilon, d, e, dt square plus mu, sigma, d, e, dt. Okay, and if you look at this equation, this term comes from the current, and this term, time derivative, comes from that the displacement derivative. And if we do not look at this term, this is a typical second order differential equation, time and spatial, second order derivative. That's a wave equation, right? So this will tell you the wave. The first order derivative is just a dissipation term, because when current, you know, you have final conductance inside the material, you have dissipation. So that will be a damping term of your solution. And since it's a wave equation, I can guess. I say, well, let me guess this wave solution. And I have the electric field. This is a vector. That means what's the direction of this wave? Propagate, vibration. Okay? Right? And then I guess a harmonic solution, K. That's the wave vector, R. This is the type of wave. This is a wave solution equation in three dimensions. Okay, if it's just a 1D, it's a kx times x. If it's 3D, it's a k dot r. Okay? It's a plane wave. I substitute this guessed solution into the governing equation. I can see whether it is satisfied, whether this satisfies this wave equation or not. Okay? And so let's do the substitution. After the substitution, you find out the relation that you need to satisfy is the wave vector, that's the wave propagation direction, must be related to mu omega square epsilon 0 1 plus x, and this x is the electric susceptibility plus I sigma divided by omega. Okay, this I comes from my first order derivative, the I. And turns out that after I guess this wave equation, I substitute in this one, the amplitude term cancels, and I have to have this wave vector frequency relating satisfy this equation. Okay, and if it's a vacuum, this is zero. And that will give me the typical relationship between wave vector and frequency for the waves. Right? So I can just write it more in the form of vacuum. If I have this one is as my epsilon, so I have mu epsilon omega. Well, this is a definition for my epsilon. That has two terms. One is due to the displacement. This is due to the displacement. The other term is due to the conduction. That's the electron motion, free electron motion, electric conductivity. Right? So this is my relationship. And K is a vector, so that means K square, the magnitude of K square, right? The magnitude of the wave vector is related to epsilon mu omega square. And if you're not familiar with this, think if I have vacuum. In vacuum, I have epsilon mu equals mu zero. That's a vacuum permeability. And epsilon equals epsilon zero, that's a vacuum permittivity. And then I gather this K square equals epsilon zero mu zero omega square. And in fact, this just tells me omega equals square root epsilon zero mu zero K. Right? And this is the speed of light in vacuum times K. That's the familiar. This is where they really Maxwell triumphed. Maxwell can show from the equation that the electric field, the magnetic field together cap the electromagnetic wave is nothing, just the light. Light is the electromagnetic wave. Okay? So, and because of this, I can define the ratio, because this is just the inverse of the speed of light. This is inverse speed of light inside the medium. So I can say this one is, I can write it as epsilon mu is the speed of light inside the medium, and C0 omega square. Okay? Well, this is C is square root of epsilon mu. Okay? And this one I could further write, if you think about the ratio, what you learned in refractive index in high school physics or undergraduate physics, the ratio of speed of light in vacuum to the ratio of speed of light inside the medium, what is it? Refractive index. That's just a refractive index. But now I do more general refractive index because that number could be imaginary or could be a complex number, right? Because I have this complex number here, and in fact, this number could also be complex. So in general, I can have this as a complex number, a complex refractive index. N is C0, C, that is just the square root of epsilon, mu divided by epsilon 0, mu 0. And for most material, the magnetic permeability is equal to vacuum in the infrared region. It just does not respond to magnetic fields. So it's like a vacuum. So in this case, it's just as epsilon, epsilon 0. And this is relative to the vacuum. The electrical permittivity relative to vacuum, that's epsilon r, is called the dielectric constant. Okay? Dielectric constant. And this is a misnomer, because it's not a constant. It's a material property, but it can depend on the frequency, because you can see here frequencies here. It's not a, it could be frequency wavelength dependent. Okay, so sometimes people call it the dielectric function rather than calling it the dielectric constant. Now let me make a few comments. So we can see, I just threw at you now the Maxwell equation. And the point that we want to say is that the solution, this is a vector solution for the electromagnetic wave, right? Electric field is a vector. That's pointing the direction of the field. And K is the direction of wave propagation, right? And other than this vector, it's very similar to the wave function here. The wave function, I only written down the 1D, you can say omega t minus kx. And I have omega t minus, in 3D, k times r. So very similar. Except that now I have directionality rather than like a material wave is a scalar wave. And secondly, this is not prove, say we do not prove it, but you can prove if you have patience. I don't require you to do that, but you can prove that E, electric field from this equation, must be perpendicular to the magnetic field, and this must be perpendicular to the direction of propagation. Okay? And so this is the so electromagnetic field is a transverse wave, right? The field vibration direction, the field pointing to the perpendicular direction to the wave propagation direction. So this is the property, and the third property I want to mention is, add one more. So if I take a square root, because this is a complex, so you will have a real part plus I kappa complex part. The real part is what we call that's what you're familiar in before, the refractive index. But because we have a complex refractive index, you can see real part of refractive index. Or this n sometimes is called the optical constant. Again, it's not a constant. It's just a function of wavelengths. And this kappa, sometimes it's called the extinction coefficient. Okay. Not everybody uses these names, but that's a very common call. And so now I have electric field perpendicular to magnetic field and perpendicular to the direction of propagation. And I have the form of plane wave, which I will use quite extensively. This form of plane wave I'll use quite extensively. And with this plane wave, I really don't need to go through back to the Maxwell equation and do all the math, because that's a solution. And my derivation of wave reflection will be based on this plane waves. And the other point is the energy propagation. Electromagnetic field photon is not a true particle, like an electron as a materials particle. And often, when I go to calculate the flux, I can calculate the photon flux, but I calculate more the energy flux of this electromagnetic wave. And the energy flux is, I use a symbol S. Again, you can prove it, okay? But I'm not going through all the math. Just like when I calculate the particle flux from Schrodinger equation, you can manipulate the Schrodinger equation, get a continuity, particle continuity equation, and interpret that term as your particle flux. And when you do the energy for electromagnetic wave, you do the same. You manipulate the Maxwell equation. Okay, you do the manipulation of Maxwell equation, and you can prove at the end that the expression I'm going to give you is the energy flux. It's based on the first law of thermodynamics. You will see that this is the energy in, that's the energy out. When you do the material flux, you will see this is based on the mass conservation, the mass in, mass out, versus the mass storage. So same philosophy here. And based on that philosophy, you will find out that this S equals E cross H. Okay? And again, I want to show you the similarity. You can see this is a particle flux, right? This is scalar, so you don't do the curl product. You have Poisson gradient. Okay? And this one is a rapidly changing function of time. You can say E is function omega, right? Look at the E. H will also be a function omega, so E cross H will be a function of 2 omega. That omega is 10 to the, if you look at the frequency of light come to us, that's 10 to the 14th power. Hertz. You can't measure that fast. Okay? And think about width. If you can measure it, that's good. But you cannot measure it, and most of the time we put a detector there, we measure the time average. Right? So the time average, you can go to calculate it instantaneous and then do your time average yourself. But there's a simpler way to do that time average. And this is, again, you can put in and you can prove if you want to do time average. This is a math operation. I'm not going to prove it. And just say this is a way to do that time average. E cross H, but this is not H anymore. It's complex conjugate. Real part of E cross H will give you the time average. And you can say why, because if I have E is minus I omega T, H is also minus I omega T, then complex conjugate of H is become plus I omega T. Minus I omega T plus or I omega T cancel. So at the end, you don't get time in this product anymore. Okay, just to show, yes, indeed, you get the time average quantity rather than instantaneous quantity that depends on the frequency of the incoming photon. Right? So, and again, you can see now it's getting even more similar to the particle flux. That energy flux is more similar to the particle flux with that complex conjugate and real part. That's why I was trying to really write this into real part. I was correcting my book. It's a complex. Yes? This one? S vector. Here. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Okay. And so this is a time average, and this S is called the pointing vector, okay? Pointing vector that gave us the energy flux. And this is just a side comment. And we all know that refractive index is positive. Okay. I know some of you heard a possibility of a negative refractive index, but most of you haven't heard it, right? And when you have you can go through the Maxwell equation, and there are cases for those properties. Okay, epsilon mu could be negative. Epsilon could be negative, mu could be negative. Okay, that's just out of phase or in phase of your coming relative to the incident field. So typically, this is S means the right hand rule, E cross H. So E cross H, when you do vector product, that's the S direction, right? Your right hand E from E to H, that's your S direction. That's your energy propagation direction. And in the when epsilon mu both are larger than zero, that's most of the cases is like that. You can have then in that case, S is parallel to the wave vector direction. Okay. And in this case, your refractive index, at least the real part of your refractive index, is larger than zero. That's we are all familiar, or at least when we talk about refractive index or optical constant, we don't talk about negative value. It was just over the last few years, very early on, 50 or 60, there's a paper by Russian that just points out, this is from Maxwell equation, that if your epsilon and mu are simultaneously negative to zero, less than zero, it turns out that you go to look at it here, when take this square root, because this is a square root, right? You take that square root, you have to pick up the negative square root. And the negative square root means a negative refractive index, negative median. So that's the... If you go to look at some of the recent hot science topic, I think last year or the year before,
the science, if you look at science, pick out what's the most breakthroughs of the year, and they'll say negative medium or negative index material. So when both epsilon mu less than zero, you can have that n refractor index take the less than zero. So this is a negative index. And negative refractor index material, and this has attracted a lot of recent attention. The problem is in nature, most of the material mu is close to vacuum. It's not liquid. And there are materials, nature existing material with epsilon is negative, but very few cases that the mu could be negative. And now people are designing artificial structures, and this happens when they feel the material is in a resonance with the incoming field. And then you design artificial structure so that the magnetic response can also be resonant with the incoming one, and then there is a frequency region where both of them, or you can make mu, first people demonstrate you can make a mu negative, and then you can make both of negative, and there are refraction. In that case, they obeys the left-hand rule. The energy is propagating in the opposite direction of the wave vector propagation. So that's negative index material or left-hand material, all those names. Right now, hot topic. If you look at the few years, probably last year, let me finish. Last year, people are arguing, no, this material never exists. And I think now the dust gradually settled. Most people will say, yes, you have this possibility. And there are also some demonstration. Yeah. Well, you are select. Okay, what's the consequence? What it means? You are select. What's the consequence? Okay. But what's the positive refractive index mean? I can't give you a very good physical picture. But you will see more familiar consequence of what's the refractive index mean. It will bend your light, right? When you have light comes from one vacuum into a material, the light will bend. So when you go to fishing, you see if you want to catch a fish in water, you don't go to the same direction you see it. You have to consider the refraction of light of the fish coming towards your eye. So it's not the same location. But they will see that at the interface. So when you got a negative, one interesting thing is that it's very strange at the interface. That's what we're going to discuss next. And I hate to erase this because there are a lot of similarities. Let's see. Where is the best to erase? Let me erase those. Now we go to look at the interface. And this is the interface for electromagnetic wave. It's an interface between two different medium that have different refractive index. Let me take first just a real. So I use a small n. This is a real vacuum. Vacuum refractive index is 1. Okay? And you have a wave comes in. And in this case, I'm going to do more general. For the electron wave, I did a one-dimensional example. Right? And now I'm going to do a three-dimensional, not the Lohmer incidence. One-dimensional means this specific example I did was, you see, this is the x direction. And the wave is going x direction. So it's perpendicular to that electric potential barrier. But maybe from this example I gave, you can go to extend that to oblique incidence. I'm going to give an example idea with the electromagnetic wave as oblique incidence. So let's say I have an electromagnetic wave comes in from medium 1. This is the wave propagation direction. And we know that it will have reflection and refraction. Right? So I have a refraction that may change the angle, and I have reflection. And I'm going to take my coordinate. This is my z direction. Somehow I'm more used to this strange coordinate. This is the wave propagation direction, positive wave. And then this is my x direction. So I always do the right-hand rule when I do my Cartesian coordinate. So this y will pointing out. That's my y direction. I use a dot means pointing out, right? So this is my x, y, z. And then I have incoming wave. I have reflected. I have transmitted. And if you look at the... I erased it. If you look at what I was doing for the electron, I say I have incoming. I wrote down the wave function for incoming, reflected, and transmitted. And I try to find out the relationship between the coefficients. This is A, this is B, this is C. And I have this relationship. And I want to do the same thing for electromagnetic wave. And the difference is now my electromagnetic wave is a vector, right? So if this is the direction of propagation, my electric field must be perpendicular to this direction of propagation. That's what we say. E is perpendicular to H. K. K is the direction of propagation, right? And I can have perpendicular, but I can be out of plane, in plane, in all directions. No matter what, I can always do two cases. Projection. I can project the electric field in this plane. This plane of wave vector and the norm of the surface is the incident plane. So this is the norm of the surface, N, unit vector, and this is a K. So N and K form my incident plane. So if I project my electric field in the plane, the other projection is a perpendicular to plane. I can solve both cases. I am going to give you one example where I say, this is my electric field. Then where is my magnetic field? Okay, so must be perpendicular. And I can do right-hand rule. So this is a E, and the H then will be coming out, right? Right-hand rule that coming towards the interface. Okay, and so the E will be incoming, and because in this case it's a vector, and the electric field is in the plane of incident, the magnetic field is perpendicular to the plane of incident. So this way is also called a transverse magnetic. So the magnetic is perpendicular, transverse. Or it's a parallel polarized electric field. So this one is, for electric, is parallel to the plane of incident. There are three limbs. That's a problem. Okay, I often get confused. I only remember, the best way I remember is whether a TE or TM. Because the transverse magnetic means that, transverse electric. So this is a TM wave. And then in this case, what I have is a TM wave. I just said I often get confused with the symbol. There are two. Okay, TM. Because the electric field is in the plane, so I use the parallel. So TM has the other symbol as a parallel polarized. That's refer to the electric field, okay? And also the word of P. Yes? polarization. So this is the electric field that's pointing this way, and magnetic field is pointing outwards, right? So it's a transverse, but relative to the plan of incidence, which is formed by K and N, that's a plan of incidence. So I have my magnetic field in this direction, perpendicular to that plan of incidence. So it's a transverse magnetic. Okay. And the polarization has different meaning. If you have a wave propagating in free space, okay, a free space propagating wave, electromagnetic wave here, if it's propagating in free space, and if the electric field is always pointing one direction, that's a linear polarization. That's a, you buy a laser, you can buy linear polarization. Circular polarization is the electric field will be rotating as it goes along, so you draw a circle in space, the direction of the electric field. Or elliptical, because it depends on relative magnitude of the electric field and magnetic field. So that's one way of saying the polarization. That's defined on the field propagation, whether it's linear, it's only one direction, circular, or more general elliptical. And then when I deal with the plan, I say this is the, I may orient my laser beam just in the oblique, in this direction, then I have to do project into either one component in this direction, the other electric field will be in the other direction. You can do projection. And the, each direction, the solution is different. Okay? So, yes? Yeah. Right. Right. That means you have arbitrary in space, arbitrary direction of electric field. You can always say there is a two projected into two orthogonal directions. So that's what it means. Okay? And so here I'm doing the TM wave. And I can write down, so this is the direction, I say this is also my magnitude. Then I have a propagation factor. I have this this factor here that I want to write it down. Right? I have this direction, I have this propagation factor. That's the solution of Maxwell equation. I don't go back to solve the original Maxwell equation. I just want to start with this plan wave form. Okay, so I put more space here so I can write. So I will write down my I omega t minus k times r. K times r. So k, so this is the angle of incidence, theta I, right? So my k will be projected into kx, kz, kx, right? So k now is k, the magnitude, let me write down just a k, if I don't carry that hat, means the magnitude. The magnitude of the vector, and then I project into x direction, I should be sine or cosine. This is the k. This will be, this is theta I, x, sine, and cosine is z direction. So it's a k cosine theta I, now I got it wrong. Sine theta I, 0 in the y direction, k cosine theta I, right? Well, the magnitude of that k, the magnitude is here. That's my k. K is this relation here, right? So here is n omega squared. So the magnitude of the square root of n, no. Oh, this should be a square. I'm sorry. This should be square. Yes, thank you. So here should be just this should be just 1 over c squared, and that means if I put a c0, this is n squared c0 squared, right? So the magnitude of k will be n omega c0 is n times 2 pi divided by lambda, right? Lambda 0 is the wavelength in vacuum. Okay. So I have my k. I have my x. R is x, y, z. So I can do the dot product of two vectors. That means I can write down this k will be, since I have n is real, n1, 2 pi lambda, and then I have the x times sine theta I plus z times cosine theta I. So this is my incident electric field. Okay? And now I can write the reflected. So this is the theta r reflection direction. And this is the theta t, that's the transmission direction. I could write each of this direction. So theta r, that's the reflected. This is reflected parallel direction. That's the magnitude, the vector, that's the direction, reflection of the parallelly polarized wave, exponential minus I omega t, and everything is the same, except that it's a plus. This propagation factor is going in the, not this plus, it's the z there. X is still the same direction. And only z is going backwards because this vector k is going backwards in the z direction. So I have minus n1 2 pi lambda x sine theta I plus z cosine theta, not I, theta r. Not plus, it should be minus. Like I said, the direction switched for the z component because the k is going backwards now. Are you following me? Matt?
All that stuff is an exponential, right? So
yeah.
Don't you lose the units of
electric field? I want to find the ratio. That's I may lose it. That's here. That's what I want to find out. How much is going this direction? Yes? Because this is reflected. Reflected wave means it's propagating this direction. So now you got a k. In this here, you have two components. This projection is negative z direction, right? So, and then this epsilon t parallel exponential, that's all my solution of the Maxwell equation, which I didn't bother to go back. And this is n2 pi, 2 pi divided by lambda. It should be lambda 0 in vacuum. And x sine theta t plus z cosine theta t. Okay. So those are my... Just like the way I'm now writing for vector, right? When I did Schrodinger equation, I just did a one-dimensional scalar. Now I do plane wave, so it's more like a two-dimensional, but also a vector. So it looks a little bit more complex. But the idea here is following the same idea. I write down the wave, I do my boundary condition, I try to find out what's the relation of this reflected to the incident. What's the relation of this transmitted to the incident? That's the mathematics. That's where I want to go. That's what I want. How much is going back? How much is going forward? Because we want to determine transmissivity from point one to point two, right? So that's the philosophy there. And the rest is just applying the boundary condition. And this boundary condition is the continuity. The continuity, I'm not going to derive the continuity condition. You can derive from the Maxwell equation. You do that, apply to a small region in the boundary. You find out that your tangential and vertical component for a source-free surface, for a surface that do not have less surface charge, less surface current, then those components must be zero. If there is a surface, net surface charge or less surface current, then you modify the boundary condition. And all this is given in the notes, so the book. So what I'm going to do is just applying, because now my surface doesn't have a net charge, nor does it have a net current, so I'm just going to say the tangential component of the electric field must be continuous. The tangential component of magnetic field must be continuous. And by doing that, also automatically you will see that the vertical component, this is a perpendicular component, also are continuous. So all the boundary conditions are satisfied. So let's just apply the boundary condition to the tangential component. And the point is, going through the math later on unless you do this research, it's not really essential. I just want to show at the end the results, the similarity of the results, the similarity of the phenomenon. That's what I want to drive to. Okay? So let's do the component. If I do the electric field, you remember when I do the wave function continuous, I say I have to add up both sides, total, right? It's not just one incoming or outgoing. It's the total on each side. So the total of electric field, the tangential component, I have to project it, right? That's the tangential, and this is the tangential. And this is my electric field. That's my tangential. So I have to say the sum of this one plus this one equals this one. That's my boundary condition. Okay, so what you have is now I don't carry the vector. This is the incoming. I don't carry vector, means the magnitude, but then I have to project it to this into the x direction. So what is this angle here? This is theta I, so that's cosine theta I. That's my component in the x direction. So E parallel cosine theta I exponential minus I omega t. You can say this, I don't write minus I omega t anymore. It's the same in every term. You will cancel both sides of the equation. So let me skip writing that. And secondly, I take my z equals 0. That's the origin of my coordinate. Right? So I don't need to write this term. I don't need to write this term. And what I need to write is the term that's left over is n1 2 pi lambda 0 sine theta I times x plus e reflected cosine theta r exponential 2 pi n1 lambda 0 sine theta r x equals epsilon t parallel cosine theta t exponential 2 pi n2 lambda 0 sine theta t times x. Right?
Thank you.
This must be I. This is I. This is I.
Okay, this is saying that the tangential component of the electric field on the one side of the interface equals the other side of the interface. And before I do the tangential component of the magnetic field, let me just make one comment. To have this equation valid for every point of x, I can derive one relation between those exponentials. For all the points of x, if they have to equal, what's my condition? So this exponential must be equal, right? So what those exponential equal 2 pi lambda 0 is the same, so that just cancel. So it's n1 sine theta I equals n1 sine theta r equals n2 sine theta t. And that just tells me theta I equals theta r, and n1 sine theta I equals n2 sine theta t. Are you familiar with this relation? Incident angle equals reflected angle. Right? The angle of refraction equals related to the angle of incidence through the Snell law. That's a Snell law. This is a Snell law. So if you have an interface, you have N2 is larger than N1, you have light comes in, you will bend this way. Right? You have water, you have fish. Water refractive index is larger than air. So the light will bend this way, and you have a fish actually. So if you have a fish here, what do you see? The fish, so the light goes this way. Where you see it? You see this here. Right? Your eye. Look at straight lines. You think it's a straight lines. So you catch in wrong place. Next time if you go to the river. Okay, so this will simplify. Cosine theta I equals plus ER cosine theta R equals ET cosine theta T. And the other relation is the tangential component of H. Okay? So the H, this one is going out, and this one is going in. This one is going out. And you can relate, you can go to solve the equation, you'll find out that H is related to T, because if it's a H, the magnitude of this H will be related to T through mu C0. Refractive index. So this is refracting index, E Y. This is the magnitude of the incoming, and this is the magnitude of the H. But the H is pointing. The incoming is pointing outwards. The reflect is pointing inwards, and this one is also pointing outwards. The right hand rule. So you can see it's all in the y direction. So for H, I can write simply
as the incoming is N1 mu C0 incoming, and then reflected is going the other direction, my right-hand rule, right? This is going into the paper. I know it has a negative sign then. So its negative sign is N1 mu C0 ER parallel, and then transmitted is my N2 mu C0 ET parallel. Because this negative sign comes from, it's propagating backwards, and my right-hand rule says it's going inside. You can solve the equation, you'll find that's the case, Maxwell equation. I'm just giving you a physical interpretation where that negative sign comes from. Okay, so now this is similar to what I want. I started with the electron wave. I have two equations. I can find the ratio of reflected to transmitted to incoming, or transmitted to incoming. That's the coefficient I want, right? That's the reason we go through this math. And those coefficients, let me write down, and then I will stop. So the coefficients of reflection are just reflection. So R is ER divided by incident, and that will be N2 cosine theta I minus N1 cosine theta T divided by N2 cosine theta I plus N1 cosine theta T. And the transmitted is ET divided by E parallel, and that will be 2N1 cosine theta I divided by N2 cosine theta I plus N1 cosine theta T. So those are the coefficients, and I will follow up in the next lecture. But just to make one comment, Matt, you were asking negative, I said the consequence. If you see this consequence, you look at the negative refractive index, the light will go this way at the interface if it's a negative medium. That's a wrong way of bending. So there are papers, light bending wrong ways. Okay? Because we don't see that in nature. Okay. Yes.
K1, K2.
That's after I substitute this C in. That will cancel one. Yeah. 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 That's the real. Yes. Because that's the flux. That's the actual definition of the flux. It's not just I take the real.